This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. World leaders and climate change activists are meeting in Dubai for COP28, the Global Climate Summit. And one of the issues on the table is how the global aviation industry can reduce emissions by 2030.
African airlines are struggling with being just commercially viable and sustainable, as most of the airlines in the region are state-owned, so they are there is government support. But also about 60% of international airlines operating in Africa, international traffic, are not even African.
That is Ogaga Ujo, a Nigerian South African aviation strategist and advisor. He joins me for a conversation on how the African aviation industry can effectively reduce its greenhouse gas emissions and some of the technological innovations being explored to make aircrafts more fuel efficient and environmentally friendly. Kenya's parliament recently passed a new dress code that bans African attire in its chambers, but many are saying that the body should be more concerned about more pressing issues that are affecting everyday Kenyans.
What they want is develop their constituencies, develop the country, empower people economically, make it possible for me to do a little business and succeed so that I don't have to be a dependent on either you as a member of parliament or a relative of mine.
That's my colleague Vincent Makori, VOA TV to Africa's managing editor. Vincent has been covering Kenyan politics for over 3 decades and just returned from a recent trip to the country. First, let's hear from you, our listeners. Now, despite producing less than 4% of the world's carbon emissions, Africa faces some of the worst effects of climate change, from droughts to floods to rising temperatures to tropical storms in countries like Madagascar and Mozambique. Development experts estimate that about 40 million people in Africa could be pushed into extreme poverty by 2030 due to the impact of climate change on their communities. We asked you to tell us about how climate change is affecting your community. This is what you said.
Oh, I'm Spiwe from Malawi. The way that has changed, like the rainy season, it's not that long as the way it was back then. And then the sun, like the hot season, it's a lot that's taken, yeah. Because sun is destroying like more of the crops, there's no rain.
I'm Faith Soko, I'm from Malawi. When it comes to climate change, me, I always think about ice melting, getting hot, weather change, the weather pattern changing. Yeah, that's all I think about. For example, when it's the rainy season has delayed, it means that people are also going to take time to plant their crops, meaning that they're not going to have food. And the more people cut down the trees, the more there's less rain and all that. I feel like it's not just the Western world. I feel like it should be on everybody. I feel like everybody's to be blamed, because at the end of the day, someone will throw a plastic thing, someone will burn something, so just can't blame the Western world. It's everyone who's contributes to global warming. Yeah.
We have had sunshine for 2 consecutive years, and has been affected our farming and agriculture and output generally. It has been very worse. Animals dying, food crops. My place, we don't have that much industries that may impact our environment. I think the problem is with us. We should care for our environment. We should be our own, supervisors.
Climate change is affecting me in some ways. I come from West Pokot in Kenya, Western Kenya. And then there we major in the pastoralism, where we are facing now movement from one place to another, displacing us, especially these sunny conditions. And I don't know that this change has occurred, maybe because of cutting down the trees and then the charcoal burning, because of the economy, people want to cut trees. And this is causing again cattle raiding and rustling.
Many thanks to all of you for sending in your opinions to the show. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Studies show that the global aviation industry accounts for around 2.5% of global carbon emissions, but that its overall contribution to climate change is way higher. In a recent meeting of more than 100 countries, leaders agreed to work towards reducing carbon emissions from global aviation by the year 2030. They say that this can be done by using new technologies and less polluting fuels. However, some countries, including many in Africa, where air traffic growth is forecast at 7.4%, that is the third highest among global regions, are concerned about the impact that such strategies would have on their growing aviation industry and their developing economies. So given all these concerns, the question is, how will the aviation industry effectively reduce its greenhouse gas emissions? Joining us to talk about this issue and some of the new innovations in the aviation industry is Ogaga Ujo, a Nigerian-South African aviation strategist and advisor. I reached him in Washington, D.C.
So I think before I can answer that, let me just set some context with regards to aviation, sustainability and sustainable fuels. So back in the fall of 2021, our global association, IATA, the International Air Transport Association, came up with a commitment that aviation would achieve net zero emissions by 2050. And this would be, of course, in line with the Paris Agreement and those other superseding goals. Now, when we translated that as to what that meant for our industry, effectively, there were about four areas in which aviation could decarbonize. And that was through sustainable fuels, which we'll be getting into today. It is through more efficient aircraft technology. It's through more efficient operations and through other factors as well. So what was found from our industry globally is that the main lever, of decarbonization that the industry could use would be sustainable aviation fuels. There are a couple of reasons for that. Sustainable aviation fuels do not require new aircraft. They are known as what you call a a drop-in fuel, which means that they can be blended up to a certain percentage that is certified, depending on the pathway and the type of feedstock used. So as a global industry, across many countries, different levels of economic activities, this became the kind of the clarion call for the industry. And in fact, it is expected from the industry that about 65% of our global decarbonization efforts as an industry will come from sustainable fuels. So to your question, how do we get there, right? And this is where the conversation becomes very interesting. Whichever country or market one is looking at, there are three things that are super critical in this question. What does the aviation industry look like from an airline, airport, demand, et cetera, perspective? What does regulation look like? Not necessarily around aviation, but pertaining to renewable energy, pertaining to expectations of decarbonization, et cetera. And then, lastly, what does the alternative fuel industry look like?
What can you tell us about some of the technological innovations that are being explored right now to make aircraft more fuel efficient and environmentally friendly?
Right. So if I take us, back to that pillar that I mentioned earlier about the ways in which we can decarbonize, aircraft technology is one of them. And aviation as an industry, which, at its core is safety and innovation, we are always and have always looked at ways of efficiency for the industry and particularly for aircraft. So, of course, in terms of conventional jet fuel, they're always looking at many ways that efficiency can be driven. And if you look at some of the aircraft that have been released in the last, 10 years, from the Airbus side to, the A350-900-1000 to the Boeing product to the other regional carrier product, all of these have released lines where efficiency around fuel usage is improved. And of course, this is dependent on how the aircraft is used, where it's used. However, in terms of new technology, that's when new aircraft are discussed. And a big investment in our industry is that of hydrogen-powered aircraft. Mm-hmm. However, where we are standing with hydrogen is that it is still part of the pathways that the industry is invested in. However, this is expected to come more online and more commercially available, more so around, beyond 2030, increasing to 2050, simply because the technology we have with hydrogen, we do not have enough storage power and battery power to power large aircraft the size that you and I are used to traveling with. But it is not, at this stage, it is not,
it's not yet there
that we can deploy.
All right, let's talk about the continent, Africa, and the state of aviation infrastructure on the continent. How well are airports, runways, and air traffic control systems equipped to handle air traffic? As we can see, more airlines are opening up, and more countries are investing in their aviation industries. What can you tell us about the state of the aviation infrastructure on the continent?
It's a really interesting question because, as you and I know, Africa is not a monolith, right? And from an infrastructure perspective, that statement really holds true as well, especially given the fact that a lot of Africa's infrastructure was inherited from colonial powers. And, we've done the best with what we can in developing that. So, in this regard, aviation is a very important business and industry in Africa, and particularly because of the nature of our economies, it's seen as what we call critical infrastructure. There are certain parts of the region where, if there is no either freight, air freight or passenger traffic options, getting goods, facilitating the movement of people and therefore services is actually very, very, very difficult. It is not like aviation in Africa, it's not like in Europe or the US, which is effectively a commodity and then multimodal options. In saying that though, Africa accounts for less than 2% of global aviation traffic. Our industry is well below where it needs to be in terms of unlocking and catalyzing economic opportunity. We have varied performance around infrastructure, not just capacity, around safety and regulation, and around a whole host of factors. So it really is a spectrum of, to answer your question, it is a spectrum of development across the region. Some markets which are more mature have larger industries, such as like Nigeria, South Africa, Kenya, Ethiopia, of course, Egypt. These have, very advanced infrastructure value chains and aviation value chains. However, other countries where aviation activity is not as prominent, things are still lagging significantly. And for us, as industry people who are aware and understand and come from these communities, we are really trying to drive that element of the role of air transport. It is not a luxury good. It is, in many respects, part of critical infrastructure, and it forms part of the last mile of transport. So getting critical goods and getting and facilitating people and ultimately facilitating trade and enabling economies, aviation is key for that. But the last mile, we still have a long way to go.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Now, again, you're right. There's a long way to go, but again, we've seen more investment coming in. How can the industry balance growth and sustainability in the face of increasing demand for air travel? I see some new routes being opened up from Kigali to Dakar to Kampala to Nairobi.
Absolutely. And I think that question is the industry, where the industry is and where the industry has been. The sustainability question is multi-layered. So from an African aviation perspective, the industry is fragmented. We have different usability and uptake of aviation across the region. And linked to that is also regulation, even in terms of how we travel as Africans, where, visas are required, et cetera. That all of those elements impact aviation. So when it comes to the element of sustainability, we need to look at it in context to how the industry is currently operating. So some of the key characteristics of African aviation include, you know, really high taxes and fees. It includes, multiple visa requirements or restrictive bilaterals between countries and airlines, which is why the AFCTA and the Single African Air Transport Market, policies are really important. But all of that feeds into the sustainability question. At an industry level, African airlines are struggling with being just commercially viable and sustainable. Most of the airlines in the region are state-owned, so there is government support. But also about 60% of international airlines operating in Africa, international traffic, are not even African. So from a competitive positioning perspective, the industry is extremely robust, and we have massive successes and massive innovations with airlines such as Ethiopian Airlines, Kenya Airways, South African Airlines, Airlink, and as well as new private carriers such as Air Peace in Nigeria, who have really driven the industry in the last 10, 15 years, and excellently so. And sustainability forms part of that. A key element is collaboration. I think that the industry is not at a state, at a space where we can have, 54 different national carriers, and that is certainly not necessary. So because the industry has really been developed through many state-owned carriers, there are still national interests that are being upheld, I would say, to the detriment of enabling this African aviation industry that would benefit all. So a cross-collaboration between private and public sector is really required.
That was Ogaga Ujo, a Nigerian-South African aviation strategist and advisor. I reached him at his office here in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. voanews.com.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Let's go to East Africa in Kenya, where the country's parliament has a new dress code. The speaker, Mr. Moses Wetangula, decreed that African attire and a popular short-sleeved suit known as the Kaunda suit, named after the late Zambian President Kenneth Kaunda, violates parliamentary dress code. Kenyan social media users were outraged by the decision, with many questioning why suits and ties, a dress code that is linked to colonial powers, would be permitted in an African government building while African fashion would be prohibited. Others, including my colleague Vincent Makori, said that the Kenyan parliament should be more concerned about legislating on issues affecting the everyday Kenyans, like the economy. Vincent, who has been covering Kenyan politics for over 30 years, just returned from the country, and he joins me in studio.
What does attire have to do with legislating in Kenyan parliament? So why is this an issue?
Thank you very much for inviting me. One of the things I have to say, in the times that we live and the issues that are really swirling around Kenyans, the economic downturn, people are really hurting from what they consider, campaign and promises that were never fulfilled. One would wonder why would you have that as an issue in parliament? And some have thought that this is just a distraction.
Like a hoodwink?
It's a hoodwink.
Yeah.
Get people, discussing and debating and, talking about something that
is
minor. Because when you think about it, that hasn't been an issue for a long time. As long as you're decently dressed.
Mm.
And there's nothing outrageous about your dressing. It has never been an issue because Parliament is about really serious legislation, debates over the economy, over the health care, over security. And those are the things that really matter to people today.
Right.
It's not so much about whether somebody's wearing a three-piece suit or a counter suit or an African attire.
Right. Let's talk about the Kenyan Parliament. This is a topic you and I think the last time, if I'm not mistaken, we had a conversation about the Kenyan Parliament many years ago was about how the parliamentarians in Kenya are the most paid in the world.
Yes.
Right? So being a member of parliament really is a job that is very well paid.
Yes.
And when you look at the salaries of other civil servants, other Kenyans, really doesn't match what their members of parliament are receiving. And
exactly. Well, this is one of the saddest aspects of politics in Kenya. Most of the people who get elected to parliament, a great number of them actually come from poor backgrounds, come from communities where they have struggled to get to where they are. So one of the campaign platforms is always that I understand your pain, I can represent you, and, you know, together we can move forward. But the reality is that Parliament and most of the political positions are actually the most lucrative positions in Kenya today.
Mm.
In the West, we know that if you want to make a lot of money, you join the private sector. In Kenya and perhaps other African countries, you want to make quick money, become a millionaire within 5 years of a job, you become a member of parliament, you become a member of the local legislation, which is they're called MCAs.
Mm.
And the truth is that a great...
Or you get appointed to a government position.
Government position.
Yeah.
Which is ironic because, remember, government is not a profit-making entity.
Absolutely not.
This is taxpayers' money.
Mm-hmm. It's about serving people.
Exactly. Mm. And some of the members of parliament, I know if somebody's listening to me, will try to make this justification. They'll say, oh, when we go up down to our constituencies, people are always asking for handouts, people are asking for money to pay for somebody's bill in the hospital. Of course, that's hogwash, because the truth is, how much money do you give to how many people within the constituency to resolve their problems?
Yeah.
About
Absolutely.
Fees and healthcare and all that.
In building hospitals, so that whatever, yeah.
Exactly. And if I may bring it to today, 2023 December, Kenya is hurting. Most Kenyans are really crying out.
Oh, absolutely. I've been reading there's an economic crisis abound. The Kenyan shilling has plummeted against
Very
the dollar.
Seriously. The president and his government have said that, they came into power and found that there's no money in the coffers, as they say. But any sensible Kenyan says, if it's true, then how do you explain the government spending right now? Very heavy, starting from the travels of the president, which has been making like more than anybody has ever made within that 1 year. How do you make sense of the fact that members of parliament are seeking even for more allowances just last
on
few
top
weeks?
Of what they're receiving?
Exactly. We have had a lack of quorum in parliament because parliamentarians said they're not attending sessions because not long ago the Salaries Commission had actually scrapped Member of Parliament's sitting allowance.
Mm.
Because
as
members of Parliament get paid hefty salaries, but they still expect to be paid a sitting allowance every time they're in Parliament.
What is a sitting allowance is for you to come to the Parliament.
To come to the Parliament. To do
to
your
the
job.
Which
for which you are actually elected by your people.
Absolutely.
So some of them have actually been sitting out. They don't come. They don't show up in Parliament.
As a protest? As a form of protest?
Because like, why should I waste my time going there when there's no sitting allowance? Now, despite the fact that they're paid so handsomely, here's one of the things that has always been fascinating, and they take advantage of the ignorance of the masses.
Mm.
The parliamentarians all come together and in agreement when it comes to increasing their salaries, increasing their allowances.
Right, right, right.
There's no opposition.
Right.
There's not even one single person, not even one of some of those rich, wealthy members of parliament who say, guys, think about the people.
Yes.
What you see is the hard-heartedness of politicians.
Mm.
Like they really never show compassion for the people out there. And I think you would see that many of them, within 5 years of being members of parliament, they are now rich men. And of course, once they taste that, they want to stay forever.
I remember the story we used to talk about how members of parliament would go to campaign in their constituents and promise to build roads. And then after 4 years, without fulfilling that promise, they would come back to seek re-election in a helicopter.
Yes.
And their constituents would be clapping, "Our guy, our son is back."
he has landed in a helicopter. You know, and they blows this dust over their faces and goes away to a nice, very, very...
But where's the road?
Where's the road? Many of them actually really never show up until much later. So you go to so many constituencies, you find that things remained the same.
The same, right. So it's really an issue of accountability.
It's an issue of accountability. Here's what I say. I mean, our countries are poorer countries. They don't have the resources. How do you explain that we spend more time traveling abroad and spending so much money? How do you explain that you can start creating so many positions at a cabinet level, and then at the same time you're saying we don't have money, you know, things are bad, we need to tax everybody,
increase taxes
in every way, but
when you see where this money is being spent, really it's not you know, for healthcare, for education, to build roads. And
I always ask, I was actually not long ago in Kenya, I asked a question: how many times do you ever hear that the U.S. president is traveling? It has to be a very significant trip.
Absolutely.
But then these are people with money.
Mm.
But they don't just go places. That's why we wait for them to travel to Africa forever.
Yep.
It's like, when did the U.S. president come to the continent? Mm. Because if it's not extremely
important... The logistics
important,
are very expensive, and they understand it. And, you know, their taxpayers probably would not be happy with the kind of expenditure that comes out of it.
Exactly.
So as you're on, I wanted to ask you, what are the things that right now that are happening in Kenya, you just visited, that members of parliament should be more worried about or concerned about in Kenya?
Members of parliament should be concerned about the state of their people. Everybody I met is hurting and crying out, and one of the things that saddens them is what they perceive as, we could say cold-heartedness of their representatives, who make millions every day. They are getting wealthier and wealthier every day, but the citizens, the people who put them on the job, are going hungry. They are suffering because their income has remained the same or it has shrunk.
Mm-hmm.
But the cost of oil, the cost of the
food stuff,
very important items.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, they have been living in that constant. The promises have been for every day.
It's about promises and
things
promises waiting
happen.
For.
And also, one of the things I have to say, frankly, it's not a secret. People are tired of hearing the blame game.
Like, of the past government.
Yeah, things will be okay, but you know, we came and found this. Like, thank you. You said that on the first day, on the second day. Now, just do the job. And so people are frustrated because they don't see the hope. They don't see the hope. You know, it's easy to tell people, don't worry, things are going to get better. But when they look at you and realize you're living a great life yourself, wherever you are promising them as a government official, as a minister, or up to the very top, they can see that you're flying high, you're living well, you're eating well, your family members
doing
are
well.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you're telling us, hold on.
Things are going to be fine.
You know, we're going to fix this thing someday.
It's a waiting game.
I don't know if I met a person who is not complaining, and especially complaining because they're saying, we were promised all these things. And at the same time, we're being told there's no money, but we are witnessing money being spent. Right now, members of parliament are fighting to overturn that rule that that banned them being paid a sitting allowance. Because the commission, the salaries commission that deals with them said, why should you be paid a sitting allowance for doing your job?
Mm.
You're being paid a
Absolutely.
Salary.
It does not make sense
How do
at
you
all.
Account?
Yes.
And why does a member of parliament suddenly turn into this greedy person once they get elected, when actually they went down to the people and people lined up, long lines, queues by old women and younger women and men and they voted you in to go and fight for them, not to go so
and
that you
fight,
can
claim, fight for your pocket.
Yeah, and also they did not elect you so that you can go there and come back and give them some handout. So what they want is develop the constituencies, develop the country, empower people economically, make it possible for me to do a little business and succeed so that I don't have to be a dependent on either you as a member of parliament or a relative of mine. You know how it is, like you find that if you are perceived to have a little bit, then you have hordes of people are like
reaching out to you, please.
Reaching out.
Yes, yeah.
And that's not what people want. Absolutely. There's an indignity to that, you know.
That was Vincent Macquarie. He's the managing editor for VOA Africa TV programs. He just returned from Kenya and joined me here in studio. And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Many thanks to you, our listeners, whether you tuned in online or via our FM or shortwave stations. Remember to connect with us on our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, on Instagram. We are also on YouTube. Don't forget to like, to share, and to subscribe. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great week ahead, Africa.